Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the Islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Welcome back to Right Here in Mass. Today's guest is Dylan Steven, who started his first marketing business, Saddleback Solutions, when he was 21. After successfully getting acquired by 118 Group in 2017, Dylan gradually took over as the new CEO of 118 Group in 2020 and has since been at the helm steering the ship. When not working or thinking about work, Dylan spends his time with his two dogs, practicing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or training for endurance races. Dylan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ashley. Thank you very much. That intro, I wrote it, but it makes me sound like too much of a tough guy. I really am not. I really appreciate being here. I think what you're doing with the Massachusetts Business Network and what you've done with Dash of Social is an inspiration. So honored to talk to your guests and to talk to you.
Thank you. I'm super excited to have you on the show, knowing that we have kind of similar stories with starting entrepreneurship at a young age. So I'm really excited to dive into that further. But right. For our guests who don't know you yet, could you talk more about yourself and what you do?
Sure. Yeah. So right now I am the principal of 118 Group, which is a web design firm that specializes in nonprofit work. So, you know, anything that touches a nonprofit's website, we are experts in, and that's what we love to do.
Awesome. And what inspired you to get started with web design? Like, how did you get opened up to the world of marketing?
That's a great question. So, it comes from a very unlikely place, and that is scooping cookies. Which is it's an interesting starting to this point to this story, but I dropped out of college after bouncing around from one college to another. I dropped out completely, not because I had some grand entrepreneurial vision like you hear about in kind of glorified stories of college dropouts. Mine was just confused, unsure of what I wanted, unsure what. You know, I was spending a lot of money on a college degree and I wasn't really sure what I was hoping to do with it. And so just didn't feel like I was making the most out of it. And so I dropped out of college. But then I found myself in a position where I didn't really have any marketable skills. I didn't have any real certifications. I really had nothing to show for to kind of build a career off of. So, which is kind of a few ingredients for a little bit of hustle and desperation, you know, when you don't have any of those things. So, I was working in a local bakery, in Hyannis called Kayak Cookies. And they actually, you know, I'm sure some of your audience has had them. They kind of, have their cookies in Whole Foods and a lot of local markets throughout Cape Cod and like the South Shore. They're awesome cookies, but I was just scooping cookies one day in this small little, bakery, and the owner was walking around the floor, and was talking about needing to redesign her website. You know, just we're talking about her digital woes. It was, being on Cape Cod, you know, which typically experiences a bit of a brain drain because most of the young professionals leave to go to the city or elsewhere. I was like the youngest person on the team. I kind of just volunteered sort of, you know, got asked. It kind of just ended up where I was in a position where I committed to redesigning their entire website. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. And I thought I knew what I was doing. I thought I did because I had like messed around with some like template website builders in the past, but then realized this had like a whole e-commerce component, a whole like shipping and fulfillment situation. Like there's all sorts of, social media pixel integrations and tracking. There's just like a lot going on here. But I just basically committed to learning it all. I did the website front to back. I did the product photography, the copywriting, the shipping and order fulfillment. And it actually came out great. And then, so essentially I used that experience and that relationship to launch me forward and, you know, give me the confidence to talk to new clients, reach out to new people, have a case study, have something I could show, you know, a little bit of proof of my work. And then it kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah. And so when you ended up kind of going through and helping your former boss with having her new website, like how did you go from having that one project and kind of dipping your toes into the water to now deciding you'd like to have it as your career and getting other clients?
Well, once I got paid to do it, I was like, wow, okay. Like I was scooping cookies at basically minimum wage, and all of a sudden people were willing to write me a check to do this work that I'm just like I just kind of figured out. I was hooked. I was like, I also was hooked by the it seemed like there was no ceiling, right? Where like if you get a job, like a 9-to-5 job, like you have a salary, it's predictable, you might get a raise next year, but there's not really necessarily a direct correlation between your work, the effort you put in and the rewards you reap. Whereas
Absolutely.
in our situation, where like we are the masters of our universe, so to speak, there is a very high correlation between the work you put in and the work and what you get out. And I was really addicted to that. I was like, wow, you mean the harder I work, the smarter I do my job, the more value I can create for clients, the more I can receive and the more I can experience. I was like, all right, I'm in. And so then I just started really hustling and making all sorts of mistakes. Like I remember one day I basically drove to Commercial Street in Provincetown and literally knocked on every single business's door and just presented myself and said, this is what I do. Do you want, can I do any work for you? And I got rejected by every single one. I don't remember walking away with a single deal there. And so it was just the start of me having some sort of naivete that I think is essential when you're starting a business, of where you're just like, I don't even see the odds, like I'm just like, I can do it. I believe in it. This is mine for the taking. And so I was just like making relationships, throwing myself out there. Actually, funny enough, I started a podcast, which I think is a great tool. I started a
Absolutely.
podcast called yours is right here in Mass. It's just funny. I'm just realizing this. Well, mine was On Cape. It's funny.
I love
And I
that.
basically just anybody I wanted to do business with and like develop a relationship with anybody I thought was like a good door opener for me, I reached out to him and I was like, I have a podcast. I'd love to interview you. I'd love to kind of develop a relationship. And people were like, it was still when podcasts were still kind of like a kind of a fresh, really fresh medium. And so everyone was like, whoa, like you got a podcast, you're on Cape Cod, you want to come interview me? And they didn't have to leave like their office. I would come to them. And that opened up all sorts of doors. 'Cause then I was like, oh, I
I
have this
bet.
podcast. And then it's like, oh, I also do websites. And they were, quickly they associated me with websites. And so, just kind of like, like the grind of bridge building is really
Oh,
what kind of
absolutely.
got this going.
Yeah, and I feel like we talked about this on the podcast episode that I did on your podcast, but I mean, it's all about the hustle, which is exactly what you did. And I mean, there's so much hubbub, I guess the best way to put it out there about like hustle and what it means to people and whatnot. And yes, I believe that there should be some type of balance, but I personally, how I feel, and I can imagine you feel the same way to some degree, is that like I don't think I'd be where I am if I didn't hustle. Like you do have to hustle for a certain amount of time until you can get to the point where you can take a step back. But it really does require getting your hands dirty and working long hours and doing anything and everything that you can think of in the beginning, exactly like you did.
Right. Yes. I mean, that's absolutely true. I remember I was sitting in my room after like an experience where I just like the Provincetown Commercial Street, which is demoralizing to some extent. And I remember thinking of the metaphor of a rocket ship, right? And like a rocket ship will burn more fuel in the first, like, I think it's like, 10 minutes of its trip than it will for the rest of the time it's in orbit or wherever else it's going, right? It burns a lot of fuel early on to get that critical mass, to get that momentum, to then sail and coast and like and hit the stars, right? And so or like a train, for example, that requires all of this work up front to build momentum, and then you can't stop it. Then it just coasts on it under its own kind of power. And so I remember thinking to myself, I'm just in the early stages of launch here. Like I just, you need to have that kind of energetic output if you're gonna break free from the atmosphere And yeah, that, you know, I also believe in balance. I think at some point, you know, it shifts to being more strategic with your work, right? Like, you know, right. I went from like just having like a, you know, a blunt weapon to try and get this job done to trying to get, you know, more precise with who is it I want to work with? What is the type of work I want to do? What are the effective strategies for reaching out to them and making those connections? I don't think you can develop that knowledge until you've done the hustle in the early stages.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And like you said, it taught you so much too, and really helped you to understand what was the best direction to go and perhaps not the best. And I love that you started your podcast to use it as a way to almost focus on lead generation, really, whether people knew it or not.
Right.
You were ready to solicit them.
Yes. I hope that none of them are listening to this now, because they're going to know I had ulterior motives. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing the power of like getting somebody on a call and just asking them about themselves, like the yeah. relationship you can build doing that. I'm sure you've built a lot of solid relationships just like having real conversations with people, you know, by asking them questions about what's going on in their lives and what they do. I think mm-hmm. the podcasting thing is definitely an effective way to build bridges.
Totally. And so when you started your company, it was Saddleback Solutions, but now you're 118 Group due to the acquisition. So could you talk more about the acquisition itself in terms of how that opportunity came up, how you knew it was perhaps the right direction to go, and then what that process was like?
Sure. Yeah. The transition from Saddleback to 118 Group was an interesting one. So it just happens. I find in my life, at least, like I've just met the right people at the right time, you know, and I think they call that luck, but luck is when opportunity meets preparation. Right. So I was prepared, you know, in the sense that I had like done the work to get out into the community and like put my name out there and like get people to know what I was doing. And then I met somebody, Dale Shadbijan, who you've actually had on this show before, who, you know, runs the show over at Cape and Plymouth Business. He basically saw what I was doing, you know, trying to build some sort of digital marketing content create, because the focus of Saddleback Solutions eventually really became content creation. So I was doing videography, drone photography, drone videography, all sorts of, I was just doing anything anybody could think of or wanted, right?
Yeah.
Trying to do like kind of this full service thing. And so he saw what I had going on and he was like, hey, I think your expertise would integrate well with what we're doing at 118 Group on the website side of things. And like, I built one website, a couple of websites. Dale is like, he like has a background in information technology. Like he knows his stuff. And so I realized, okay, I need to merge with him, learn as much as I can from him, like just soak up as much knowledge as I can from him. And then, you know, use that to continue to fuel the growth of this thing. And so we merged back in 2017. He basically acquired us and our client base. And then I came on really as a pupil, you know, to some extent. I mean, we spent every day, the team that we had at the time, which was four people, we spent every day at Cape Space, which is a co-working space in Hyannis. We had a tiny little office where we would all four spend all day, every day, just trying to learn from Dale or trying to like, you know, develop ideas or work on projects. I remember it was a small room. All our computers were firing. It would just get hot and stuffy. And then someone would bring in like a burrito from B2 Burrito and it would just like stink up the whole room. But I miss those days. You know, it was like, it was like the garage, you know, like the classic garage entrepreneur startup journey. That was our garage. And so we grinded it out for a couple of years. And then, you know, eventually Dale wanted to transition out into something else because he had done this for a while and he trusted me with the company. And then, so then I took over as kind of CEO principal in 2020.
And what was that like after like transitioning into the CEO owner of that space after you had been acquired? I mean, I think it's so interesting going from one company to another and eventually becoming owners of both.
Yeah. I mean, the big learning curve for me when it came to like Dale's exit and my full responsibility was that the buck really did stop with me, you know? So the good thing about like a small group, like the one we had at 118 Group is like, I had plenty of responsibility early, right? Because there's so much to do. You have to spread that out. People just wear a lot of hats and there's a lot of expectations around performance. But when Dale was gone, it was like, I was the guy now. Like if there was a problem or something wasn't working, it's like, there's no another chink in the chain that I can send things up to. It's like, it ends with me. And then The other thing that, which is was a challenge that I still grapple with to this day is, you know, Dale being a more seasoned professional, he'd like that I said that instead of old. He, you know, like I think age brings a certain credibility to what you do to some extent, and rightfully so, because I think that there's a certain hard-earned wisdom that is gained over time. So then we, you know, I had to be the face of this group to all these clients who really knew Dale and really loved Dale. And I was like, who's this young guy who, just can't relate to us necessarily. You know, I just was like trying to be young as, and you alluded to this kind of the parallels we have is like trying to be young and professional and, and convey confidence, I think was a big challenge that, you know, I think it's just an ongoing battle.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Business and marketing advice meets laughing so hard you cry. Meet one of my business besties, Liz Teresa. Liz has been building amazing websites and unforgettable brands for more than a decade, and now has decided to share her genius with all of you. Every month, Liz is teaching on super helpful topics from Canva to newsletters and everything in between to get your creative juices flowing and more clients and customers rolling in. Check out her upcoming classes at lizteresa.com/academy. That's lizteresa.com/academy. See you there. And so for any clients who might have struggled a little bit with the change in leadership, like what was that like? Did you do anything particular to, like you mentioned, demonstrate your confidence and your extreme skills that you have to show that they're still in great hands, regardless of whether it's just you or you and someone else leading?
Well, you see, that is a great question. So I think the issues kind of broke down across two different sides, right? It was like, you know, just personality differences, which exist sometimes, right? Like, my personality and Dale's personality are different, right? Like, we kind of just have different approaches to things and it works great, but it just means like, you know, Dale had developed relationships with people who had certain expectations and certain personalities and wanted things done a certain way. And then when a new leader comes in, they bring a bit of a different vibe and maybe a different process and a different kind of outlook to things. And so it was basically like, look, here's how I want to do things, which might be a bit different than how Dale was done. You know, can we adapt? Can we work with us? And if the issue was too core and fundamental, it was like, well, you know, this isn't going to work then. You know, we all know the cost of a poor fit, right? It's substantial. And so we lost some clients for sure. But if it wasn't a personality issue, it was just kind of a trust issue. It was just like time we just needed to show up every day and continue to show them that like we were serious and we cared about them and we had their best interests in mind. And then, you know, as long as there wasn't like a core fundamental, like personality or philosophy issue, you know, we retained 99% of our clients and a lot of those clients are still with us to this day.
And that's a true testament to you, the team that you've built, and also all the hard work that you've put in.
Indeed. It has been a lot of hard work. It's amazing when you look back on it. It's like, how did I put out all that effort? Right. Like you sit down now and you're like, what extra like compartment of energy did I have to do that? And I really do think it's, you know, some level of being naive, some combination of naive, desperate, inspired. I think all that kind of creates this like jet fuel that you can use for a while until you transition to a more steady kind of fuel source.
Yes, you nailed it. I mean, it kind of reminds me of the phrase, when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. And it's almost like sometimes you get in a position where you don't even think about what you need to do or what you're doing. You just do it. And then, like you said, you get to the point like 6 months, 1 year, 5 years down the line, you look back and you're like, did I really do that? And it's so like,
Yes.
But it's like, if you stop and think about it while you're doing it, then I feel like it might bog you down. You just kind of have to like rip the bandaid off and go for it.
100%. That's so true.
Yeah. And so with that, how have you been able to continue growing 118 Group since you took on as the sole CEO and being able to bring in a bigger clientele and kind of continue to expand?
Well, you know, you got good questions. I mean, I've really spent some time thinking about growth itself, right? Because, you know, I think growth isn't always a good thing. You know, I think sometimes mm-hmm. you can grow in the wrong direction, or you can, your bottom line may grow, but that doesn't mean the quality of your life as an owner or the quality of your team's life is growing, or your connection to your team or to your clients might not necessarily be growing, right? So, which wasn't always my mindset, right? Like when I was just starting off, I needed to make some money. I needed to grow a company. I needed to like move out of my parents' house. And like, I needed to like develop some independence. It was like, I'll take any work I can get. I'll say yes to everybody. And, I'll do it with a smile. And I think as I've gotten a bit older and a little more independent and more secure, for me, growth has been, how do I grow the expertise of our firm? How do I work with more clients who are a better fit for us? How do I build a company that allows me to do the things that matter most outside of work as well? So like the fear for me is to be chained to my computer and chained to my desk, especially with two dogs and like a diverse set of interests that occur outside of a building, right? Like I need to have that kind of independence and that kind of freedom. And so on paper, our growth has been steady, you know, and solid. But like, if you look at the intangibles, right, like in terms of my relationship with my team, our knowledge that we've developed, and the flexibility and kind of satisfaction that we all get from our work now, that's off the charts now. It's just like, we've hit a really good place for, we know how to run this thing. We know how to work with our clients. We know how to, and we know how to balance work and life. And I think that's a huge part for me, beyond just like, you know, numbers on a balance sheet, is like, what is the quality of this experience been for me? And that's continued to improve.
I think you made such a great point about growth, perhaps growing in the wrong direction or increasing your bottom line, but not really benefiting the life that you want to have. And that's one thing I often think about too. And I feel like when entrepreneurs get to a certain point in their entrepreneurial journey, they likely have the same thought as well. But it's like, how can I continue to grow and serve more people without physically needing to put more of my time into it and not sacrificing nights and weekends or working a schedule or a lifestyle that doesn't really fit what you'd like to achieve in your life, and taking away from the opportunity to do the things that you became an entrepreneur to do in the first place. Like, you became an entrepreneur so you could do certain things, and now you're getting to the point where you're not able to do them because you're an entrepreneur.
Right. Yes. And one of the biggest, you know, moments for me in that journey was, like you mentioned, how do you grow without spending, just losing more time, right? Because it can be hard to see a path for that when you're growing. It's like, especially when you're billing, you know, which is what we've done for, what we did for a long time, was like billing by the hour. It was, mm-hmm. it didn't take a math professor to say, okay, well, if we want to make more money, we have to work more hours, right? Which to me, like, it took me a while to really like that to sink in, and for me to say, wait a second, like, how is that going to work? Like, how isn't the goal of our experience to, you know, have greater rewards with less input, right? Like less mm-hmm. time, right? Like, we want that to be asymmetrical. It's like, how am I going to do that if hours to time to money? It just seemed like an equation that was just going to, like, you know, not work for me and my philosophies. And so when we switched our pricing method, that was one thing that, once we disconnected the what we get from the time we spend, all of a sudden, like, it became clear to me, like, okay, like, I can grow a company while I spend less time, and where I, you know, my main product isn't like the labor hours of my team, right? Where like, if you want to make more money, you got to add on a team member who has another 30 hours that you can bill out, right? Which, for example, I have a sister who works for a big law firm. And I hope she's not watching this because it seems miserable what she has to do billing in 6 minute increments and kind of. And so I got onto this whole like ditching hourly crusade, which we don't have to go too much into, but that was one of the big moments in that growth trajectory we talked about where I was like, you know, disassociating those two things, which is a hard thing to do, has been huge for me.
Oh my gosh. And I'm fully in agreement with that concept too, especially because like, I feel when you switch to that retainer or flat rate fee, then you're also being able to bill for like the years of experience you've built up and other things that might not necessarily be added into that hourly rate or that people might not know about. And so also too, this is my favorite thing to think about, but it's like, if you've been doing something for so long, you do it faster. So now you're punishing yourself for doing something quickly and doing it well.
honestly, like that hurts. That hurt me. Yeah. It was like, wait, you're telling me I've developed all this expertise over all these years and I am going to make less money because I do it faster, right?
Exactly.
That was like, you know, like, and you can read about things, but until you really like integrate it and feel it and understand it, it's like, it doesn't really have an impact. But like, once that really like settled with me, I was like, I have to change the way I do this, which is tough which has been a challenge when like your entire company's, you know, existence has been based in hourly billing, right? Like how do you, which is a whole separate podcast episode, is like, how do you reroute clients? How do you introduce clients to like tectonic shifts in business practices? And like, how do you steer that ship? How do you guide people without too many people jumping ship, right? Like while you're moving things and creating turbulence. And that's another thing I still am trying to learn is like, how do you gradually move clients into a new direction that you ultimately know is better for everybody, right?
Exactly. I just dealt with that a few months ago when I changed my whole bookkeeping system and software over to QuickBooks. And that was like a whole other thing that I had to do. And it's so hard to make those changes for clients because you worry like, will this change like make them leave and end their contract?
Yes.
But then you have to also think about if they leave because of this, then maybe it was for the better anyway. So tough to think about.
Yes. That's so true. Anytime you're switching it. That's a great example. It's like, no, now that you just pop your head out, you're like, hey, we got to switch this. And they're like, you're worried they're going to ask themselves, like, do I need this anymore? Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, if they're fickle enough to leave you because of an accounting system change, they weren't a real like stable future, like strong client or core client to begin with, I imagine.
Exactly. And so now that we've talked about all that you've done in your career, let's talk about websites overall. So for anyone, any business owner listening to this podcast episode and are thinking, okay, Dylan's really convinced me that I need to do something about my website and make sure that it's in the year 2023. So what would you recommend that business owners look for or make sure that their website has in this day and age?
That's a great question. I think a lot of my recommendations come down to three core areas. Really, it's our main framework. And it's nothing revolutionary, but you know, it works to kind of, it's a good lens to look at your website. And that's content, design, and technology, right? Mm-hmm. So you know, in terms of content, I know this is something you probably know a lot about. You know, it's just making sure that you are continuing to stay relevant and active with your content in 2023. You know, like how stale is your messaging? How stale is your content? When's the last time you refreshed the way you communicate with your clients, with your audience? You know, design perspective, there's all sorts of UX best practices that most websites do not adhere to when it comes to, you know, issues as simple as like contrast, scannability, navigation. I think, you know, content design and then technology, it's like, are you on the platform? Do you feel like you're on a platform that has worked best for you? Right. So there's all these options now, especially with AI, you know, like there's a whole new world of ways to handle your website. The question really comes down to, is the platform I'm on fueling my success, helping me grow, giving me a sense of control over what I'm doing? Or is it a pain in the butt? You know, like, is it something that just leads to frustration that's just holding me back? I think you should maybe think about a UX audit, maybe, you know, just you know, having a small team take a look at your website, give you some recommendations, and then go out and look at what the most successful companies in your space are doing. I always love to do that. It's just like find a model for success and then compare your situation with that model for success. And you'll quickly start to see, here's what I'm missing. Here's what I need. I think, like I said, basically content design technology, use that framework to make sure that this thing's still serving you. It's still up to date in 2023.
I love that. And I also love the point that you mentioned about having a small team review your website, because they're kind of able to view it through the unbiased lens, especially if it's someone who's a professional or someone who might actually be an ideal client for you. I imagine that this is probably like something that might frustrate you a little bit, but it's maybe when someone says, oh, well, my brother-in-law looked at my website and said, I need to change A, B, and C. And it's like, well, is your brother-in-law your ideal client?
Yes. That's a whole, you don't want to get me started on the whole, like, yeah, my cousin, he does SEO, or he typed my website into Google and this is what he saw. You know, it's like, yeah, I mean, definitely a professional team who you trust, who I think is going to be able to ideally give it to you straight. You know, like I think we just need to make sure we're developing relationships with these providers that, that are transparent and that are honest. I think there's so much information today available, for any consumer, anyone who wants to do any research on this stuff. There's so much information available today. The key is, to know where to look, you know? So, I think, do your research, hire a small team to do a little bit of an assessment if you're stressed about it. And then you'd probably get a lot of outcomes out of that.
Absolutely. And then when someone ends up having finally a beautiful website that converts and provides a great user experience for any website visitor, they're now probably thinking, well, how do I drive traffic to this website? Now that I have this great website, how can I actually get people to it? And so from your perspective and your expertise as a web designer, what suggestions would you have?
Suggestions in terms of driving traffic, I think one of the main channels that you're the expert in here is social, right? So I think having a solid social media strategy is going to play a massive role in driving traffic to your website. Search, I think, is, you know, here to, obviously it's we all use Google search. We all use it to find websites. Like, there's no question that that's something you need to invest in. That's a changing landscape with now these new like AI integrations into Google and Bing. And then, you know, like there's all like the search generative experience that's rolling out. So social, search, and then, you know, general content marketing. I mean, for me, my focus for our own website has really been to provide value with our content and to answer questions that people are asking, right? Like, you know, and I'm sure, you would agree that like by doing some social listening, by understanding what is your industry talking about, what are the questions they're asking, you know, what are the pain points, and writing content that suits that, you know, answers that question, you will be rewarded for that. You know, like the gods of algorithms and Google will reward you for that work. Content, you know, content marketing, search, and social, I think, are really solid tools for that. And actually, I'm reading this book right now called Content Chemistry.
I'm gonna have to add that to my list.
It's really good. He kind of pulls the analogy of a sailboat and how a search engine optimization strategy acts like the sails, email and social media are the oars, and paid advertising is the motor, right? If you stop paying for advertising, the engine runs out. There's no more fuel. If you stop working with social, you're going to quickly, you know, if you stop posting or stop investing in it, you're going to fizzle out. Search is something, if you can find a way to rank, if you can find a way to get to the top, you can coast on that effort and on those results. It's a long-term fuel source, right? Whereas some of these other ones are a little more, they need to be constantly invested in. So definitely, so those basic things, search, content marketing, and social, I think, are key.
And I think all three of those at the core, they all focus on consistency. So being able to, with the search content and focusing on providing value and everything like that, it's all about being consistent and always delivering what your audience is looking for.
Definitely, definitely.
And so what we've also talked about a few times during this episode is that you are also a podcast host. And I recently found out just from today that you had another podcast with On Kate. And so I'd love to hear what inspired you to start your most recent podcast, Delivered, and how you've been able to create content for that and what that journey has been like for you.
That's a good question. Yeah, Delivered has come from a desire. You know, I'm learning all these things as someone who provides expert services to clients that I wish I had known earlier, you know, like where I was like, I've done like, it just would have transformed 118 Group at an earlier stage, right? Like just fundamental major concepts that I hadn't been exposed to, maybe because I wasn't looking, but I just hadn't been exposed to. And I felt like I had been done a disservice by not knowing about these things. You know, for example, that the hourly billing kind of situation. And so I just said, I want to put this out into the universe. I just to put it out there, just like, here's what I wish I knew if I were starting over. And also I wanted to, I think by, you know, if you want to do something, like you can do or you can teach, right? If you want to learn, you should teach. And so for me, podcasting and trying to articulate some of these concepts and some of these strategies and ideas has helped me understand them more, you know? So it's really been just an exercise. You know, I don't expect anybody, we're not going to get a big listener base. It's not super high production value. We don't do a good enough job promoting it. But at the end of the day, we're sharpening our own sword by having to get together, talk through a concept, work through an idea, and articulate it, which I think is kind of really how you learn material. And so for me, it's been just an enjoyable experience, but also, like I said, a way to kind of develop my expertise.
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting that you're speaking to the service providers when a lot of podcasts are kind of speaking to people who might be their ideal clients or their ideal customers. So it's really about education. And I love that. That's what I love about marketing is just, I feel like a lot of people and professionals come together to help one another out and educate one another.
Yes, right. It's like I'm certainly not doing a podcast that's targeting my audience, right? If anything, you know, Dale and I laugh because sometimes we kind of give some of our secrets away as like service providers, right? Like, you know, we talk about bad clients. We talk about our struggles, you know, which isn't necessarily what our clients want to hear, you know, but at the end of the day, it's like, I really value the community of service of creative service professionals and the knowledge I've been able to gain from them. People like you and the content you put out, I think we all kind of make each other better. I think it, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats to add another analogy to the mix. And so, yeah, I think for me, it was an opportunity to just contribute to this community of people who are in the grind and in the struggle and in the trenches like I am and like you are.
Absolutely. And speaking of community, what would you say your favorite local businesses are to support?
Well, so actually my mom just got into entrepreneurship. She just opened up what's called a refill store. And I don't know if this is a concept that a lot of people have heard of, but basically, you know, it's got all sorts of reusable cleaning products for the house. And so instead of buying all these bulky plastics for like your laundry detergent or your dishwasher detergent or like your counter cleaners or whatever, you go in and you bring you reuse a container, you bring it in, you refill it. And it's all sorts of local cleaning products and soaps. It's called the Monadnock Green Shop and it's up in New Hampshire. And I love what she's doing. She's sending it on an entrepreneurship journey. She's, you know, in her mid 50s and she's trying to reinvent that. And so, I'm definitely going to plug that for her. Also, she would kill me if I didn't. Right. So, and then I just started going to a new, jiu-jitsu gym. And I think everybody should support their local jiu-jitsu gym. I think they do a lot of good for the community by bringing people together from all different backgrounds, and just bonding over something that it can't be divisive. It's just a really healthy environment. And so there's one I just started going to. It's called New England Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in Concord. Highly recommend that. And then another local business that actually catered my wedding recently, called Taco Biondo.
Ooh, tacos. That's a good wedding food.
It is. Yeah, I got a lot of crap for it, but it was great. So Taco yeah. Biondo, Monadnock Green Shop, New England Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, that's probably where I'm spending my time.
Love it. Dylan, this has been such an awesome episode, and I've really appreciated having the opportunity to have you share more about yourself, your career journey, and everything you've done. And now I'd love if you could share with our listeners where they can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further.
Sure. Yeah. So you can find me on LinkedIn. That's Dylan Steven. You can see me trying to implement my own content strategy, welcoming feedback on that. And then you can learn more about my team and what we do at 118group.com. So that's 118group.com. And actually, like I've said before, I'm impressed by everything you do, everything you're always rolling out, everything you're trying. And so glad to be able to connect with you, develop a bit more of a relationship with you directly, and support the mission.
Likewise, Dylan. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Adios.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.